Atheist Nomads, episode 304, The Ridiculousness of Worship Styles.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about
I thought you were going to stop Please trying to wing the titles.
Yeah, I was going to stop trying to wing the titles, except for when I forget that I was trying to stop to wing bringing the titles. We're going to call this one something better than that, but yeah. I'm Dustin, and joining me is Lauren.
Hello!
And we have Chris with us.
Hi.
Chris is a local comedian. He was invited on by Aaron, and Aaron has a fever, so she isn't with us.
Yeah, quote unquote, fever. I don't know. I think she's drunk.
So, Chris, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I would say that my comedic style, I'm usually trying to go for surrealism, which is to take... At least insofar as I try to take ideas that people have that are automatically recognizable that have implications and then lead them by those implications nowhere.
Like, okay.
Leaves them laughing a lot of the time and not knowing why.
All right. That works. And I see you have a I Drink and I Know Things shirt.
Yes.
So no spoilers. We are behind on this on... the latest season of Game of Thrones.
Well, as always.
One usually has to drag information out of me.
Okay. All right. So we do have a couple of announcements. First one is if you are listening to this several days after release, you may have already picked up on it. Otherwise, you'll be hearing it next week. But unless you are a supporter, ads are coming.
Don't roll your eyes at me.
We were contacted by a group that wants to help us out with getting advertising on the show, and the increased revenue will be very nice. Having multiple revenue streams for the show will be a very good thing for the future. And from Jimmy, good for you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is nice. It's an invite-only program.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Somebody actually reached out to us, so that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Offered to give us money in marketing.
Something to do with nuts, I hope.
Nuts. I don't know.
But as
probably Les Schwab.
As always, though, the Patreon feed will be ad-free, and as we move off of Patreon, the new membership platform will also be ad-free. So if you give us money, you don't get ads. If you don't give us money, we will still get money for you listening. Okay, tiny, tiny fractions of a penny for every time you download. But still, that's how you'll be supporting the show. If you want to help it out more directly, you can do that. And ads are not... The fact that the show has not had ads much is not... because of a philosophical opposition to having ads on the show. It has been for a lack of ads to run on the show for many years.
He's like that single guy at the bar who's just like, hey,
for many years
I dance.
I built ad breaks into the show and just didn't have any ads to put in them. And we did have Archway hosting ads, but Archway is no more. Yeah, so now we're gonna have more advertising.
Yay.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and move on to dusting off the degree. I am going to get back onto more directly the Russian Orthodox Church. But a fascinating topic that's kind of tangential to the question that was specifically asked, or actually might have been directly involved in the question that was asked that launched that, is the differences in worship styles across the different branches of Christianity. And I'm going to kind of break these down into not necessarily the most common groupings that you would expect. But for the most lax, you get the megachurch. This is often white evangelical, very, very large churches. They often have little restaurants and coffee shops inside the church. They'll often have multiple church services every weekend, plus additional stuff happening all the time, because, you know, if you've got 20, 30,000 members at your one little church, you might as well always get people coming in.
Their architecture is rather gaudy, as if I'm remembering correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Gotti.
And they have a tendency to have not just very lax worship styles, but numerous worship styles that happen. There will often be a service that is where the music is a rock band and the pastor does a short, kind of lively, try to relate it to your life in some way, very informal sermon with a very informal service. Other services at a mega church will often be highly orchestrated, choreographed, professional level productions with a band and a very polished sermon being delivered by a ridiculously overpaid pastor. And
I imagine it would be a lot like those guys who motivational speakers.
Yeah.
this is differentiated from the televangelist type of mega churches that have cold reading and that kind of
right. Yeah, then you get the Pentecostal churches where it kind of resembles a little bit of what some of the services might be like at a mega church, where you get there. It's a lot of, it's very high energy. It's very active. And they use the music to
brainwash you,
put the people into a particular mental state,
brainwash you,
where they start speaking in tongues,
brainwash you.
The service turns into complete chaos. Those services will go very long and are very chaotic.
See, I think it would be a lot of fun if they were short, but I think it takes a while for me to be able to get into it, right? It's not like walk in and start having seizures and speaking tongues.
No, you have to work people up into a frenzy to get them into a frenzy. You can't, unless you want to drug them.
Well, don't black churches do that with gospel and stuff all the time? They don't have crazy...
Some do.
Frothing at the mouth.
Some do.
Stabbing themselves with snakes.
And also... Black evangelical churches, which is the next category, their services will often last all freaking day. I have been to two black churches. One was Adventist, one was Baptist. They were far more alike than they were different, other than just being on different days of the week. But they started with music. And, you know, the main church service started at 11 o'clock, and it was finally wrapping up around 3 o'clock when everybody was hungry and finally wanting to go to the potluck.
The body of Christ is good and all, but it's not very filling.
Right. And so, literally, that service is like an hour of music and then an hour-long sermon followed by another hour of music with singing and dancing and a full choir and... It was enjoyable, but so tedious because it just wouldn't stop.
How many different ways are there to say God is great? A lot,
God,
I suppose.
Is great.
Yeah.
God is great.
So then there's the white low church Protestant, which obviously isn't black and isn't mega churches and tend to not be Pentecostal. It tends to be an informal, relatively informal. Actually, that's not even quite the right word. It's formal with a tradition that is not the high church tradition. So you'll usually have an organ, maybe a piano, maybe an organ and a piano.
Ooh, fancy pants.
Singing hymns.
Where's the harpsichord? That's what I want to know.
Verses.
Singing the old hymns. There's a scripture reading. There's usually a presiding elder who does the announcements. And everybody in the that is doing something is sitting up on the platform. And then finally, the pastor gets up for a 20-minute sermon. And if they aren't out by noon, they are all very unhappy or falling asleep. That seems to be getting a little bit more lax, but these services do have a tendency to try to keep it to 1 hour as exact as possible. Start at 11 p.m. and... When you are preaching at one of these, you look at the time when you get up to the sermon, to the podium. And I know from experience, you look at the time and you try to figure out how much time you have until noon and how much time you think you can get away with before people start getting hangry.
So when you said 11 p.m., you meant 11 a.m.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yes. 11 a.m. to noon.
What?
As a child, I mean, I was
midnight services or something.
I was raised Roman Catholic, and generally, Sunday was an arduous trial with the reward being brunch, mm-hmm. brunch or Denny's or something.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Which?
Just hang on, and you'll get that Denny's deal.
Then there is Western High Church, which is Catholic, Episcopalian, some Lutheran, some Methodist.
Are these the ones that just take themselves way too seriously?
These are the ones that do tradition because they need to do tradition.
Okay.
So, or in some cases, they do tradition because they think it has magical power. Roman Catholics seem to think tradition has magical power. Episcopalians seem to be a bit more, it's tradition. So you just do tradition because tradition is what you do. And so you do the tradition because that is what you do. And so those services tend to follow a very structured format, not just for the how each service goes, but they follow a calendar. And the liturgical calendar is based on events in the life of Christ and the different saints' days, and Old Testament and New Testament verses are worked into the schedule so that you preach on certain topics and have scripture readings from certain passages as you work your way through the Bible and at various points through like Holy Week and the Advent period and all of that. Now, if you're just somebody in the pew, you may not realize that all of that is happening.
Certainly not as a child.
Maybe. Yeah, but it is that structured as to when the pastor is looking at the calendar to plan out the sermon, the topic is assigned. And that theme must be worked on as the basis for the sermon.
Couldn't they just use the same one every year then?
Yep.
That makes me sad on the inside. I feel like people are getting tricked. It's like you're listening to the same sermon as last year.
Some of my theology professors, and this would have been Adventist, not high church by any mean, but some of my theology professors, when they were in college, they were taught, oh no, you write 2 years worth of sermons. You write a new sermon every week for your first 2 years and then move.
They are being tricked.
And then you can just keep recycling the sermons forever. So yeah, that will happen. Some will do that. Now, if you are preaching a certain quality fresh out of college, if you're still preaching those same exact sermons you wrote fresh out of college 20 years later, that's worse than just lazy.
Yeah.
As a performer, I'm offended.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nobody can get away with that unless they really just hate their lives, I think.
Or know that everybody's sleeping or not paying attention.
You're just trying to make it to brunch.
And I have a hard time repeating things 3 times, so.
So you must really hate those commercials where they say the web address 3 times to emphasize?
Mm.
Or the phone number 3 times?
Yeah, well, repetition. Hmm. Just, I mean, repetition mainly just bothers me in popular songs.
That's all that popular music is, isn't it?
Well, I can't stand the song, It's Closing Time.
Oh, yeah.
How about Tequila?
That's the repetition, that seems fun.
How about the shots one? Shot, 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 shots.
They're not repeating themselves every 30 seconds or 12 seconds in Tequila, so.
Okay. So with the
tequila
with the high church, there's also a very structured. You stand at this point, and you say these words, and then when you're done saying those words, you kneel down, and somebody else says words, and then you stand up, and then you say words, and then you sit down, and somebody else says words, and it is a ritual that follows an exact pattern. That is amazing, almost. Also, it's just really ancient. This has been going on like this for a very, very long time. In the case of the Catholic Church, they just, in the 1960s, decided you can start doing it in English.
And actually, my dad read a book about, it's called Why Christians Can't Sing, and the author told a small anecdote about an old woman he was at a service, a Roman Catholic service, and an old woman he saw was not really paying attention to anything that was going on. She was just doing her rosary, and then they came to the point in the service where you're supposed to turn to your neighbor and offer them a sign of Christ's peace, and he held out her hand to her, and he said, I forget what you're supposed to say, but still, he said it, and she looked at his hand like he was offering her dead fish, and said, I don't believe in that shit, and went back to her.
That is awesome!
Went back to her rosary, and it was because she was raised in the part where Mass was in Latin. You're not supposed to really understand it. You're just supposed to do the things.
Yeah. Which...
they're very meditative, I bet.
And that would be one of the big reasons why there is so much physical action with it, is for so long, you had no idea what they were saying. So you're taking part in a ritual with magical words being uttered that you do not understand. For you to have any part in it, you have to be doing things physically.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I still like that joke about purposely mispronouncing Latin so you don't accidentally summon a demon.
And then Eastern Orthodox churches, our high church, their services tend to resemble Roman Catholic. The language that is used may be the local language of the country you're in, or it may be the country that they're from. So you might go to a Russian Orthodox church and they might be speaking Russian. They might speak English. It might be a mix of the two. Greek Orthodox might be Greek or English or a mix.
Have good food.
And their food festivals are amazing.
Yes.
They don't have pews. So instead of sit, stand, kneel, sit, stand, kneel, it's stand, kneel, stand, kneel. And I think occasionally lay prostrate on the ground.
Do they have pillows?
No.
Hmm.
Suffering is part of the mystery of the faith. And
the magic.
Eastern Orthodoxy is a lot more into the mystery than the Western churches are. And that makes it's more mystical. There's more magic.
That almost makes it more believable. Right, because I mean, you don't have the questioning doubt that you have.
Yeah, if you don't have answers, then you have the same questions, and you're apparently not supposed to get answers.
Right, and the Eastern Orthodox Church, they have the old rituals and traditions, and haven't had to change it much. The Roman Catholic Church has had to change several times, either in response to the Protestant Reformation or due to people being fed up with not hearing, being able to understand what the pastor's saying. And so Catholic churches had to change, and as they've changed, they have lost a lot of the mystery. And Protestants have basically rejected the mystery flat out, with the exception of Pentecostals, who have no ritual to make it organized insanity, and it's just pure chaotic insanity.
Wait, is that, do Pentecostals derive from Quakers?
I think it's a bit of Quaker and a bit of just evangelical.
Oh.
That's one we'll have to cover soon.
That'll be fun.
I just recall Quaker services being like, you just sit there and whenever the spirit moves you, you say something.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't believe in this shit.
Well, the spirit spoke to me. Bye.
All right. Well, it's time for news. And if you want to support the show, you can go to atheistnomads.com/donate to find out how, or be patient and wait for the new site to go live with the new membership system that I'm working on. It's exciting. It'll be fun.
Kylie is looking forward to it.
Yep. And a good way to make sure that you always get ad-free episodes. And in the news, we've got Mike Pence. He spoke as the commencement speaker for Liberty University.
Again? How many times are they going to invite him back?
as long as he's vice president.
He can't be, he can't do speaking engagements anywhere else. He gets made fun of too much.
And so he said that it's become acceptable, and I'm quoting, it's become acceptable and even fashionable to ridicule and discriminate against people of faith.
Yep, that's what we're doing.
Oh, boo-hoo.
God. Well, you gotta be the victim, like we've said over and over on this show. You know, people want to be the victim.
There was something about that written into, there was some sense of that written into Catholicism, as far as I could tell. Like, the gospel according to Paul was Paul writing to struggling churches.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're God's special people, and you are going to get persecuted for it.
Or in some cases, both. So he had as an example, quote, it wasn't all that long ago that the last administration brought the full weight of the federal government against the Little Sisters of the Poor merely because that group of nuns refused to provide a health plan that violated their deeply held religious beliefs.
I don't think, or that is it. On the surface, it seems like it would be difficult to reconcile, except you're still not allowed to... I mean, the person has to have free will. You can't take their free will from them. That's not part of the gospel, I wouldn't have thought. So they should have the option to sin.
Well, and the Little Sisters of the Poor, for their charities they were running, and I don't remember, I think it was a adoption or foster care agency or something like that they were... They were running
one of those nunny places,
but not direct churchy activities. So they had to fill out a form that said they won't be providing contraceptive coverage, which they thought was still indirectly providing
It still went against them.
Yes.
It was too much of a hassle to fill out a piece of paper. It's like, how dare you victimize us? No, it's just a piece of paper.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So that's a big example of them, Christians being persecuted, is having to fill out paperwork.
It seems par for the course insofar as, as exemplified in the Obama administration, he reached out and reached out and reached out, and all they did was spit on him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially since, with that one in particular, the Hobby Lobby ruling was that the administration could have done more to not put burden on religious people who own companies. And what's crazy is that conservative approach of you need to do more to not affect these people's religious freedom, which the easy solution on that would be just have the government pay for contraceptives.
Yep.
Create a new part in Medicare, and, you know, kidney dialysis is completely covered by the government as part of Medicare. Put contraceptives on a Medicare plan and just make that completely covered from the get-go. That would have been the easiest solution on it, but the Obama administration made the mistake of thinking that filling out paperwork wasn't overly burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
And by filling out paperwork, we're talking about a single page.
Mm-hmm.
And Pence also had to use the example of his wife returning to teaching art at a Christian elementary school and getting harsh attacks by the media and the secular left.
For teaching art?
For teaching art at a homophobic Christian school.
Right, because her husband's the vice president.
Uh-huh.
And there's some... associations there that you don't want to have. I also call kind of bullshit on that, though. That's not worth fighting over. I'm sure lots of first ladies and first VP ladies have done religious-based stuff. Hey, our problem isn't with her. Our problem is with him.
Yeah.
So just, we should focus on that.
I know we ignore that story on the show because... Where she teaches school is not particularly relevant.
Nope.
And the other, let me see. But I've listened to, like, when you actually are in a discussion online and you actually get a flavor, a taste of where people who lean right are coming from, I have no idea what world they're in. Like, all of the hate is coming from the left.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get that message? I don't understand.
Probably because I hate them.
Well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that anti-media, anti-left. They hate us, so we're going to hate them back. And it's like, funny, we're not the ones that are trying to impose laws to limit your bodily autonomy or, you know, your general safety and fair housing, etc., etc.
And I can recall, let me see, a woman posted a meme online, and it was blatantly anti-LGBTQ, specifically trans. It showed a picture of a, I doubt that it was what it said it was, so it was just like a vaguely effeminate young man or woman, doubled over because they, according to the meme, they had been shot in the crotch by a smoke grenade, and the caption was something like, when you're, I don't know, when the existence of your balls won't let you, or when your pretend gender doesn't protect you from a shot of the balls. And when somebody posts something like that, I don't know, I don't feel like it matters necessarily how much of a difference I'll make, but I feel like you have to be challenged in some way. So I just said, what a ignorant and hateful thing to post. And it turned into a conversation, which at times seemed like it was going constructively, but then she got into my instant messages, and we went back and forth for something like an hour. It got more and more frustrating. Like, she seemed to have the impression that LGBTQ people riot on the reg, and she wanted to know how they were being oppressed, and I tried my best to explain. And she said, well, women go through that too. And I kept trying to say, yes, but justice isn't a zero sum game. What are you doing? And eventually it escalated to the point where she just, blocked me. I don't know why exactly.
Okay. Yeah. You get to the point where you get so frustrated, you feel like you're talking to a brick wall. They feel like they're talking to a brick wall. It's usually best to end it there. But, yeah, I think it's an empathy thing. And if you lack empathy for a certain group of people, there's not a whole lot that's going to be able to switch that mentality. So talking to them isn't really going to help anybody. It's just frustrating on both sides.
Yeah.
Because until that person has a kid or a family member who comes out trans and they're like, oh, I suddenly understand because I have something in this battle now. That it's just this group of weirdos who want to be victims. It's exactly what we're what we're saying Christians are doing. And that's annoying.
And
only it's not just annoying. It's people's lives are being, God, that woman in Dallas that got killed. I mean, people are dying over this. So yeah, they are being victims.
And I tried to explain the conditions that were not very long ago, like in the 70s. I forget when the riot in San Francisco happened. That's the only riot that I really know of connected to transgender people. But it was totally justifiable because of how they were treated. I mean, you get rejected from your family and you end up in San Francisco, and then you get herded into the Tenderloin, and you can't get a job necessarily unless you can pass. And even then you're in danger of being outed and fired. Yeah. Etc. Etc. Riot.
Yeah. So Jimmy commented, "Gotta love the comical violence." That would have been reference to the meme.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Ha ha! Crotch shot.
Yeah.
And that conversation, what occurred to me was, transgendered people have this conversation over and over and over again. I had it once, and I was tearing out my hair. Yeah. How do they do that?
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess just because they have to.
Yeah, if it's if you have to have that conversation to be treated like a human being, you keep having that conversation.
And I am non-binary, but I don't feel especially uncomfortable in my skin. I just don't feel especially male or female, and I don't mind having the equipment I have, so I don't really experience the struggle that much.
Yeah. All right, so Washington State has ended personal and philosophical exemptions for childhood vaccination requirements, and this applies to both attending daycares and schools. This came after more than 70 cases of measles earlier this year, and the bill was signed into law by Governor Inslee at the Vancouver City Hall, right where most of those measles cases were.
Now, I have a problem. I am autistic, by the way, so...
Okay.
Hooray for the... I mean, I was surprised that like, when I learned that... for a while, I had that in the back of my head that I didn't really have to address it. I wasn't afraid of vaccines, but I was aware that there was a fear out there. And then I ran into it in communication class, where even the teacher was ignorant of the fact that that study was... I mean, the original study that linked autism and vaccines was a fraud.
Yeah.
And that ruined at least one career, which should have been ruined because he was trying to defraud courts. Like, he was selling a specific kit for prosecution and making bank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this is as... The particular community where this hit the hardest was a immigrant community, and it is immigrant communities that have bought into this more than anybody else, and because immigrants tend to travel back to their home countries more often, and most of those countries have not eradicated measles, its immigrant communities are where measles are coming into the U.S. Unvaccinated children going to Ukraine or Israel or the Philippines, and then they return to the U.S. with measles. And if that group of, if that immigrant population has low vaccination rates, then it will spread. There was a bad one a number of years ago in Minneapolis, in the Somali refugee population, because they'd bought in on anti-vax rhetoric. The biggest outbreak right now is in New York, in an Orthodox Jewish community, and it's all getting imported in by people who are not vaccinated, and it's spreading among people who are not vaccinated in small pockets of people. But then there's also the liberal white American, not quite hippie, but loves all natural everything, that hate vaccines because, ooh, dirty, unnatural toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids are going to get it eventually with one of these outbreaks.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that are not going to be protected anymore in Washington State. Unfortunately, the group where this happened was an anti-vax religious group, and this bill does not end religious exemptions, which means this change in the law would not have changed anything.
They just have to change their wording when they're objecting, if I recall the story.
Yeah, because religious exemptions are still allowed in Washington. This also means that it is more likely to fail in court, because the current precedents on exemptions like that is that if you allow for religious exemptions, then you must allow for philosophical exemptions, because you shouldn't be giving religion that kind of preferential treatment. The legal framework in our country has shifted a bit in the courts, which means this would actually have more of a chance now to be upheld, because it's still granting religious privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And religious privilege is in favor with the courts now.
You think that's a direct result of the judges that the Trump administration has been able to shoehorn in?
The hundreds of judges
Yeah, that really...
Across the federal courts, yeah.
Really put a chill down my spine.
Yeah.
Now, what I hate is, like, the thing that I come up against a lot when I'm trying to be proactive politically is generally what my position is always difficult to explain, and it's so easy to, like, bring up a, well, what about, and it takes me 10 times longer to explain than mm-hmm. it does for them to bring up 5 more
yeah.
inane non-issues.
When you're arguing from fear and paranoia, it is far easier to... It's a lot harder work and takes a lot more time to refute a bad claim than it does to make a bad claim. And they have a tendency to have a lot of bad claims to make. So while you're trying to refute one, they'll throw 4 or 5 more at you that you have to refute. And you just can't. It is a strategy that has been well developed. It's the Gish Gallop.
The Gish Gallop?
That's what it's called. It's from a Christian apologist who is famous in debates for throwing out assertions so fast that nobody could respond.
Mm.
And win debates out of sure number of points that he made.
And also, I learned about it as a tactic that's often used in a YouTube series called the Alt-Right Playbook, where they mentioned it in one video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jimmy added in, say as many lies as you can in the shortest amount of time so that when your opponent tries to correct you, it takes way more time to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So one group that actually is trying to intervene in Washington to help parents with philosophical objections to get religious cover is a church, sort of, out of New Jersey that is using something called MMS. They're labeling it a miracle cure.
Hmm.
MMS stands for Miracle Mineral Solution. It is it's two parts that you get that are perfectly safe and non-volatile by themselves. And then when you mix them together, they create industrial bleach.
Oh, yay.
And then you drink it.
You drink it after it has become bleach.
After it's become bleach. As the miracle cure for everything from HIV to cancer, malaria, it will protect you from measles.
And I never really followed up. Like I think there was a bleach challenge at one point, which was at least visible on the national stage a little bit. And I never really followed up to see what that does to you.
Mm-hmm.
But you would think that after enough people drink bleach, they would say, wait, something's wrong with this.
Yeah. Now, one of the earliest cases I heard about with this one was using it to try to cure kids with autism.
Oh, goody.
So cure autism by drinking bleach. And you know that it's working when they start shitting out their intestinal lining.
And as an autistic person, I'd like to reiterate, fuck you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Being autistic isn't that bad. It's maybe a little bit more difficult to communicate with me, but...
But it's not... It's not a disease.
Mm-mm.
It's not something that needs to be cured or can be cured. Your brain's just not wired like my brain is wired.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. That's not pathogen. There's no pathogen there. There's nothing pathological going on. It's just your brain's wired a little bit different.
It has certain advantages even. Like, uh-huh. Did you realize that neurotypical people don't know how to talk to each other?
And so the latest thing that Pastor Robert Baldwin is doing with MMS is shipping it to Uganda, where he has sent sufficient quantities to dose 50,000 people and is offering pastors free smartphones to give this to at least 50 members of their churches.
Does it ever seem to you like a lot of policies in whatever if the organization is conservative, the policies that they promote generally involve poor people dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going with Uganda and places in the developed world because MMS is illegal in Britain and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And nearly illegal in the U.S. because of FDA regulation. So he's picking places with little or no regulation so he can get away with it.
Mm-hmm. That's like a time-honored church tradition, I think.
Uh-huh. And so they've worked out the dosing for infants.
Oh, good.
You give them just a little bit. Yeah, they'll spit it out. But yeah, just give them a little bit. And yeah, they might have a little bit of rectal bleeding by the end or a little diarrhea, but it'll cure them of everything. And for children who are not just infants, then you just give them half of the dose that you would give an adult.
Sounds scientific.
Of fucking bleach.
Mm-hmm.
Which bleach, as a medical grade disinfectant, works by destroying proteins.
Mm-hmm.
We are made up of proteins. If you get bleach on your hands are going to turn white. Not just because the bleach is going to remove some of the pigmentation.
Their hyaline is being denatured.
But it's going to start killing your skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's nasty stuff that you don't want to get come into contact with. And it gets diluted way down, even in a hospital setting, to reduce some of that risk. And you sure don't drink it.
Mm-hmm. Not even the, what, I think it's like 2% in laundry bleach.
Yeah. Laundry bleach is really dilute. Hospital grade's about 10% solution, sometimes 20% solution. I don't know what it would work out to in with MMS, but oh man, that's just dangerous. Oh, and he calls his ministry Global Healing.
Ever noticed how whatever conservative organization, if it is a conservative organization and they introduce a policy of some sort, it's usually the opposite of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
The name is usually the opposite of what it does.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They advertise themselves as using the power of Almighty God to greatly reduce the loss of life in Africa by having rich white people convince people in Africa to drink bleach. And it almost seems like more so to get them to make their children drink bleach.
What the hell is going on? I really wonder whether or not the person instigating this or the people instigating this truly believe or have some kind of hybrid of making themselves believe, but also, well, if a few black people die.
I actually think he probably is a true believer.
Hmm.
I have a hard time believing even a charlatan would be trying to get people to drink bleach.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but
that's going too far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of bullshit out there, but having people drink bleach, that's a special kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And Alabama had to one-up Georgia in banning abortion. According to one Alabama state Democrat, he said that the bill raped women. That was his description of it. It has no exceptions. So it is a 6-week abortion ban, no exceptions for rape or incest, which means, and also at 6 weeks, most women do not know they're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's not planned, they aren't going to know they're pregnant. And this bill passed the Alabama Senate 25-6.
Mm-hmm.
They know it will not be enacted. They know it will go to court. They know they will lose in court, but they are hoping to take advantage of Trump's Supreme Court appointees to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm. Which, as far as I know, doesn't go as far as, like, even Roe v. Wade doesn't go as far as it should, if I understand it correctly. Like, the trimester model, it's correct. It has a hard line at the first trimester. You can't impose any regulation before mm-hmm. the first trimester. That's how it works, right?
Right. Cannot restrict access to abortion before the, or during the first trimester. Second trimester, you can do minimal, light restriction, and restriction's fine in the third trimester.
Mm-hmm.
So late-term abortion can be banned under Roe versus Wade. There was a later case that revised it to you cannot regulate prior to viability. That was the Casey ruling. That is a number that keeps going down as to at what point a fetus is viable.
Mm-hmm.
As neonatal intensive care gets better and better and better, the ability to keep a baby alive that was born premature gets better and better and better, which means we're down to the point now where under Casey, you could ban abortion at about 27 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even down to 24 weeks. What these bills are all trying to go for now is fetal heartbeat at a point when it's not even a fetus and there isn't even a heart.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's the yolk sac beating blood.
I don't know as much about embryology as I thought I did.
Yeah. The heartbeat starts from the yolk sac.
Hmm. I had it watching a video from one of my favorite YouTubers, Steve Shives. He brought up the point that there is a double standard that has always been there about bodily autonomy and the standards of risking your life. Like, you can't legally compel somebody to donate an organ, no matter, like, just bar none. You can't even force someone to donate blood. And you can't force someone to donate an organ even if they're dead, legally speaking.
Right.
And, so that's a huge double standard. Speaking from the same principles, you can't have a law system that has that kind of double standard. It doesn't stand.
Yeah. Now it's where the abortion debate is different is it's the line between when cells become a new human being and when that new person's bodily autonomy deserves protection.
But still, you can't force somebody else to protect someone else's bodily autonomy with their sacrifice of their bodily autonomy.
Right. That's where the debate is. There was a time period when infanticide in certain cultures was perfectly permissible.
Mm-hmm.
Until the kid could walk and fend for itself, it was not, didn't necessarily have the full protections of a member of the community. And we have reached the point where everyone agrees that life begins at, that is a person at the point that is born.
Mm-hmm.
Where the debate is where before that, if at any point before that, is that a person?
Mm-hmm.
And there is some room to debate with that.
Yeah.
I think there is room to debate up if it is a viable, if the fetus is viable, meaning it can survive outside of the womb, I think there is, you know, that's a perfectly fine time to say, no, that's not good. Assuming it is viable, not setting an arbitrary standard of at this particular point, you cannot abort. Because that's how you can also get into cases where a late-term abortion, when they actually happen, is not a viable fetus. And that's when you're getting where the choice is between forcing a woman to carry something for potentially several months longer that will not survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a definite violation of bodily autonomy at that point.
Like being reminded every day that your baby is dead,
mm-hmm.
and having to carry it along.
Yeah. Yeah. So Alabama's bill is absolutely atrocious. And hopefully it will die in court. So in Ontario, the highest court there has ruled in favor of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario that in their requirement that any physician who has a philosophical or religious objection to providing services like assisted dying, contraceptives, or abortion are required to provide a referral to somebody who will do it. Three groups of religious physicians sued, and it went through the courts, and the court decided that forcing them to provide a referral is an imposition on them that is less burdensome than making the patient have to go out on their own and find a new doctor to help out with whatever it is that they're needing.
Mm-hmm.
And that making them go out on their own would be a violation of the primary care physician's role as the access to the healthcare world.
And that's a side effect of having more and more specialists out there. So you have to have somebody who could direct you to the specialists. And if you are going to somebody who won't do that, then who cares what the burden is on them as the patient? That's no bueno.
Right. Well, and being a doctor means you are a doctor, which means
you should do no harm. And if by doing nothing is bringing harm to somebody, then you're doing harm.
But doctors are authorized to perform any services that doctors can perform.
Mm-hmm.
Any limiting of that is a self-limitation based on skills and competencies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say that if you can refer somebody because you don't want to treat their heart condition because you don't feel that you're capable of providing that service, so refer them to a specialist, that it really is that much different to say that because you have an objection to what they're wanting, that you need to refer to them to another competent professional who is competent and comfortable performing that service.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's like saying, well, God gave you a heart condition, so it goes against my religious belief to intervene and give you a pacemaker. It's like, no, that's not how healthcare works, and as a doctor, that's bullshit.
Yeah. So, good job, Canada.
Curiosity. And they were... Hold on, refresh me. They made it so that a primary care physician has to provide the
referral.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you go to, if a woman goes to her gynecologist wanting an IUD and the gynecologist has a religious objection to that, then she has to do a referral to somebody else that will do it.
Which is what most doctors would do.
Should do.
Yeah. Like it's, that's like the line between, okay, I'm not okay with doing that, but I don't want that to happen ever. You don't have the legal authority to say that can't happen ever.
Right. Because the alternative is the doctor just says, no, I won't do that.
And that has happened, especially with pharmacists.
Leaving the patient with having to figure out, okay, where can I go so that you don't end up having to go through five more doctors till you find one that will.
Mm-hmm.
That's expensive.
Paying a copay every time.
Yeah.
Well, now in Canada they don't, but...
Okay, yeah. God, I hate America sometimes. Fucking copays.
Austria has banned Muslim headscarves in schools.
That's rude.
Yeah.
So the law is specific enough to not allow head coverings that provide a certain amount of covering.
Mm-hmm.
But they made sure that if it's a patka, basically a Sikh turban, or a yarmulke, that's fine.
Hmm. Okay, that's absolutely not.
So it covers most of the hair, or some of the hair, but at the point that it covers all of the hair, then it's not allowed. And at the point that it covers all of the hair, that's a traditional Muslim headscarf.
Mm-hmm. And as much as I believe that all religion is essentially very elaborate child abuse, that's not okay.
Yeah. Jimmy just said, yeah, I can't see why that matters. Yeah, literally, it comes down to if it covers 10% too much of the hair, then it's not okay.
And I don't, this is one of those things that, although I believe, like, that was my point about abortion was, all right, fine, it is debatable. Like, the morals and the ethics are debatable. They're not set. But you can't solve it with laws.
Mm-hmm.
You have to solve it socially. So this is the same thing. I believe that people indoctrinated into religions, there's injustice going on there. But you can't solve it with laws. You're just discriminating.
Well, and I think this... There actually is a pretty decent analogy between this and abortion is... If you restrict access to abortion, we know what happens at that point. It's not that abortions don't happen. It's that they happen less safely and women die.
Yeah.
And if you don't allow Muslim girls to wear headscarves to school, then Muslim girls don't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
These are laws that hurt women.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's all they do.
That is an excellent point.
If you think it's abusive... Inherently abusive that Muslim women have to wear those coverings, and the effect is that they just can't leave their home.
Mm-hmm.
You're not helping them.
Yeah. The best intentions, right?
Yeah. And in Ireland, a anti-gay pastor from the U.S. ended up being the first person ever excluded from the country.
Hmm.
He was planning on making the trip. Stephen L. Anderson, he's a Baptist pastor from Arizona, who is anti-gay, anti-Semitic, and in 2009 told his congregation that he prayed for the death of Barack Obama. He also praised the gunman who killed 49 people at the Pulse nightclub in Florida.
Well, I wouldn't want him in my country.
So, yeah, he was invited to go to Dublin and... under a law from 1999 that gave the government the ability to exclude dangerous people from the country, they excluded him from the country.
Sounds prudent.
Jimmy, good for Ireland. Fuck Steve Anderson. That guy is the worst. Yeah, he is. Oh, man.
I suppose I've worked so hard throughout my life to... try to be open to everyone that it's hard to remember what it's like to be so tribal.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be able to latch on to just a supposition or an axiom like being gay is evil or Jewish people should die and just latch on to it and
mm-hmm.
that whole conclusion first, evidence later thing.
Yeah. All right. And it's time for feedback. We did also get an email from Petra, who is a secular counselor who just started a private practice in Meridian, Idaho, and she wanted us to give her a mention. She is one of only two therapists who are part of the Secular Therapy Project in the state of Idaho, and new practice just starting out. She is openly non-religious in her practice website, explicitly provides secular therapy.
Mm-hmm.
With no religious bias going into it. So if you're in need of that, you can check her out at petracounseling.com. And that's it. If you want to support the show, you can check out atheistnomads.com/donate. If you want to contact us, email us at contact@atheistnomads.com or hit the SpeakPipe button to leave us a voice message. Chris, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Do you have anything to plug?
Well, there's a show at Grainy's, but it's tomorrow. I don't know how.
This is getting released tomorrow.
Okay. Well, at Grainy's tomorrow at 8, I believe the doors open at 7:30. There's a show with me and I should know who's on the show, shouldn't I? No, I'm a feature. My friend Eric Cole is a feature. The host is Emmanuel Christopher Michael Vera and one of the funniest people in Boise, Dustin Shalafo, will be headlining that. It's a one in a lifetime or a one in a lifetime sort of thing. Come on.
All right. So if you are in Boise and listening to this on the day of release and have the evening free, check out, go to Undergrannies. And that's it for this week. Listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.